For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, in the book of Genesis, it says, God created man, male and female, he created them. And if you look at the news today, it looks like we're trying to recreate male and female. What's the story?
Well, I think increasingly, Kent, what's sort of caught my attention, or in a jolting sort of way, has been some of the news articles about teens in particular that have caught my attention, who are in some mode of transitioning, is the term being used, from one gender to another, and competing in sports in a way that seems to raise a lot of questions and a lot of eyebrows. So, for example, of a recent article that caught my attention, maybe some of you listeners saw it as well, is a high school girl who identifies gender identifies as a boy, and is in the going through treatment to try to change her gender, and is on the wrestling team, in this case wrestling other girls. But it's what the article points to, though, is this young woman by a couple of things. One is that by receiving very strong medical pharmaceuticals, her body is becoming increasingly muscular. You can see it in the pictures, and then therefore the question is raised about giving her an unfair advantage over other girls because of the pharmaceuticals that come as part of her her transitioning treatment. But then I think also it also, of course, you know, if we zoom out a little bit, points to a broader issue as to the morality, the ethics of teens, much less adults, going through. This is a very radical. It's a very radical process, and yeah. So we want to talk about that today.
Yeah, particularly the issue of teens and children going through the transitioning process. This is something fairly new. This is a escalation of what has been going on, honestly, less than a decade. So there's sort of a rapid, I think, move to try to accommodate a little bit more people who are in the process of transitioning based on their gender identification. And there's a further radical, I think, push to force society to accommodate this. Sports is probably the latest frontier of that, of trying to accommodate this type of thing within the sports world by, she's transitioning from female to male, so we have to accept the fact that she's going to be on testosterone and other, steroids that, used to get people banned from the sport of wrestling.
Right.
In this individual's defense, their choice would actually be to be wrestling in the boys category in the high school events. However, in the particular state that this is occurring in, the state high school athletic commission insists that an individual compete in the gender category noted on their birth certificate. So even after transition, this individual would have no choice.
Yeah, so therein lies the complexity. And, I think we all want to make sure right up front here in the beginning of the program, too, is that it's a sensitive issue. It's a very complex issue. We want to approach it with all due charity, and we want to seek the truth of and lay out try to get our arms around or begin to understand the principles that are at work here, because there's a lot of philosophical, there's issues of medical, there's medical issues, there's parental rights, philosophical principles at work. There's theological principles. There's all kinds of things that are caught up in this issue.
Ontological issues. I mean, you know, really honestly, what is it to be male? What is it to be female? I mean, these are all issues that are kind of wrapped up in these that, you know, that's what we do here on the show. We find things in the headlines and we try to dig a little bit deeper and get to some of the underlying philosophical issues underneath them.
Yeah, I think one of the and we're going to need help too. So I know we're going to bring in someone to help us with this issue too, sort of sort things out a little bit. But before we bring our guest in, I guess one of the things that's been on my mind, sort of prepping for this conversation that we're having today, is something you kind of touched on, Kent, which is you mentioned that, you know, the state has a say so in these issues. And I think one of my concerns and areas of interest too is as gender ideology advances or permeates society, it's bringing with it more and more state power for enforcement because we have to use the power of the state to sort these things out. Where did we hear it? You know, go back a couple of years ago. What was grabbing headlines then? Bathrooms. You know, who can use which bathroom and when, or locker rooms. And again, it's dealing with what? Minors primarily is where the concern had been. But large corporations have gone down this path. And so it's a pressing issue because, as you mentioned, Mark, it's come back the last few years especially, but it's been building momentum over the last maybe 5 to 10 years. It had been sort of laid to rest, I think, going back. It had kind of come up in the 60s with the sexual revolution. In the 70s, though, it seemed that there was a significant amount of research into it, and it was pretty much put to a halt, this idea of having – back then it was referred to as sex change operations, pretty much seemed to have come to slowed way down or that kind of stuff put to rest. But boy, it's come back. It's come back. And now the spot not with who, I mean, you have Bruce Jenner, right? Has really, right, captured a lot of attention and drawn a lot of attention to this issue. And transgender advocates have been actively promoting this or putting this under the banner of civil rights. And so, which has garnered a lot of political energy and controversy along with it.
Yeah, there's become a political cause around it that I don't think existed previously. So it used to be that, yeah, you'd hear about people having sex change operations and things like that, but there wasn't a political moment that was pushing this forward. And certainly there wasn't in a push for accommodation by the rest of society. And to further that accommodation, you have to have, to a certain extent, the power of the state affirming it and pushing it. And so there's a huge political push now that I don't think existed even a decade ago.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think but that's where we're at. And so now you have, for example, in I think it's in New York, where you begin to have what statutes that are being brought to bear, you can find yourself being fined for not correctly using the right pronoun in referring to a particular individual. So if you get the he she wrong, you could be subject to, again, state power, right? State power by way of a fine.
And that puts a, you know, that that brings in a whole nother level of philosophical questions, especially when you're looking around medicine and the practice of medicine. You know, what is the doctor's role? Is the doctor's role to heal the body? Is the doctor's role to somehow divine even beyond medicine what's in the best interest for this patient? Or is he simply just there to kind of do as the patient wants, kind of facilitate the patient's choices? It's putting a lot of pressure on doctors. And doctors are finding themselves in the crosshair. You know, there's stories of doctors being pressured, losing their jobs, etc., because they don't necessarily think this is in the patient's best interest, but the political push is pushing them in that direction.
Yeah, there's definitely a very strong, motivated camp, if you will, that is has an agenda, and to stand in front of that agenda is to risk much, including career. So I think what we're going to need to do, though, Mark, is let's bring in someone who has done a lot of research and on this topic and can help us, you know, approach it, you know, with, again, seeking truth and in charity. And I think when we come, we'll take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have with us Dr. Ryan T. Anderson. He's from the Heritage Foundation and written several books, many articles, given many lectures. His latest book is called When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. So stay tuned to the Catholic Cave, and when we come back, we'll have Dr. Anderson with us.
We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Listening to this radio was really like the jump start of me getting to know Jesus.
This is the station that led me to Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
40 Days for Life is a campaign of peaceful prayer vigils held at the site of abortion providers throughout the world with the goal of eliminating abortion. Here in Central Indiana, the Lenten 40 Days for Life campaign will run from Ash Wednesday, February 14th, through Palm Sunday, March 25th. Would you consider making this campaign a part of your Lenten observance? Go to 40daysindy.org for more information. That's 40daysindy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Tim O'Donnell. Still in the cave with me is Mark Tuttle and our trusty sidekick, Kent Blanford. We are super excited, though, to welcome for the first time into the cave, Dr. Ryan T. Anderson. He is the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's an author of many books, including, I've read all these actually, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, co-author of What is Marriage? Men and Women, a Defense, and Debating Religious Liberty and Discrimination. If you're listening, you may run across his work because he's on ABC, CNN, CNBC, NBC, Fox News, New York Times. He's even been quoted a couple of times now by the Supreme Court. And we're welcoming into the cave to talk about his latest book. And it's called When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. And so welcome, Dr. Anderson.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Well, I got to tell you, I think you've done an incredible service by courageously tackling this issue. We're hearing a lot, it seems, about gender identity and transgenderism, and it's a tough issue, right? It's a complex issue. It's a sensitive issue, and we want to approach it with all due charity and respect, but we also want to seek to understand kind of what's been going on, where are we at, and where might we be going. So could you share a little bit about what's the book about? What are you aiming for it with this particular book?
Sure. You're exactly right. It's amazing how quickly things have moved in our culture. A generation ago, when Harry met Sally, the theme of that movie was whether or not men and women could be just friends. Today, in my book, When Harry Became Sally, the question is whether or not men can become women, whether boys can be trapped in the body of a girl, whether medicine can reassign sex. So it shows you how quickly we've gone from a culture where we took sex differences seriously, right? An entire movie about whether or not men and women can be friends, just friends, based upon the sexual differences between men and women, to today, whether or not boys can become girls. The main argument of the book is that sex is not assigned at birth. You frequently hear that phrase, sex assigned at birth. It's not assigned at birth. And that's why it can't be reassigned. Sex is a bodily reality. It's a biological reality. And then gender is how we give expression to that reality. And so our gender identity should align with our bodily sex. When this doesn't happen, when people are suffering from gender dysphoria, the most helpful therapies, they don't try to remake the body to conform it to the mind. The most helpful therapies try to align our thoughts and our feelings with the reality of our bodies. And that's more or less what the book's trying to explain to ordinary people. You mentioned, you know, the PhD, I was cited by the Supreme Court. This book is meant for ordinary people. Just a high school education, you can read this, understand it, and most importantly, benefit from it to help you respond to what's going on.
Well, it's incredibly well-written and well-researched. I mean, I'm kind of a footnote junkie. I love footnotes because it often catapults me into other things, and the research really is outstanding. You've already touched on one thing that I'm very interested in this with this particular issue. It seems that the language that's being employed now has changed. It's something I think you touch on in the book, where we've gone from maybe using language describing our feelings in terms of using terms around like desires to identity, that it's about, I think you bring this up, there's sort of an ontological or metaphysical shift that's happened in these last maybe 3 to 5 years, where we're no longer talking about kind of my attractions, we're really talking about who I am at my ontological existence, and therefore it makes it much more difficult, I think, to even engage in polite discourse about the issues.
You're right again, and this is intentional. So what's interesting is that you can see from 5 and 10 years ago, LGBT advocacy groups referring to the T, transgender, as a man who identifies as a woman or a woman who identifies as a man. That the concept of a transgender identity was someone who identifies as the opposite sex. Now, those same exact groups are making language guides for journalists that say, don't say those things. Instead, a transgender man is a man. Not a woman who identifies as a man is a man. And what you're pointing to is that they know that rhetorically, a claim about who someone is much more effective than a claim about how someone identifies. And so what we see now in the transgender movement are claims about philosophy, about metaphysics, about anthropology. But the other side doesn't want to have the debate on the level of philosophy. So they dress it up as scientific claims. And so in the book, I quote kind of, you know, leading scientist after leading scientist making outrageous claims about the science of these issues, precisely to score political points. And so we need to know kind of what terrain is this discussion being engaged on. It's being engaged where the doctors and the scientists are the high priests in our culture, even when they're not making actual scientific or medical arguments.
Well, one of those claims that what you share in the book that really struck me is this, medical doctor after medical doctor saying, we need to ignore, DNA. We need to ignore chromosomes. We need to ignore, you know, all this objective reality that really, I think, constitutes what, you know, and instead, you know, set all that aside. And instead, what trumps all of the sort of empirical evidence is subjective feelings. And that, I think, is a huge philosophical shift because how would you even begin to validate that?
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing here is that the doctor you're referring to is a professor at Duke University's medical school, and she's the director of the Duke Child and Adolescent Gender Care Clinic. It was opened 3 years ago. And this is the tragic situation that parents are finding themselves in. Parents who have a child struggling with their gender identity, who are just trying to do what's best for their child, will take their child to a hospital like Duke and think, look, this is a world-class hospital. We're going to go see the expert who leads you. And what they're receiving is advice from someone who has strong ideological commitment, who's presenting those as settled scientific facts. And so the treatment protocol that you would be advised from one of these gender clinics would be for your five-year-old boy who identifies as a girl, dress him as a girl, give him a new name, refer to him as a new pronoun, allow him to, quote, socially transition. Then for your 10-year-old, put your 10-year-old on puberty-blocking drugs to prevent that child from going through puberty in the, quote, wrong body. Then for your 15-year-old, give your girl estrogen, give your boy give your girl testosterone, give your boy estrogen to mimic puberty of the, quote, correct body, to masculinize your girl's body, to feminize your boy's body. And then at age 18, they could have sex reassignment surgery. And these parents, they're simply, in many cases, they're simply trying to do what's best for their kids. But the advice they're given is heavy on ideology.
That ideology seems, at least at face value, to be often very contradictory. Because on the one hand, you have this idea that, well, you know, gender is fluid. You know, it's based to a certain extent on subjective feelings and how you identify. And then on the other hand, gender is something that, you know, has to be taken seriously by everybody and must be respected by everybody and to a certain extent is unchangeable. And it's almost like there's an attempt to talk out of both sides of one's mouth when speaking about gender issues. Is that contradiction? I mean, is that, I think, consciously held to a certain extent? I mean, that's got to create a certain amount of dissonance.
You know, there's a section in the book titled The Philosophical Contradictions of the Transgender Worldview. And I don't think most activists actually realize how many contradictions comprise their worldview. But it's remarkable because on the one hand, they embrace a new form of the ancient philosophy of Gnosticism, in which the real self is something other than the physical body. But simultaneously, almost all of them are materialists, in which only material bodies exist. You have people here who are saying, look, gender is just something that exists between spheres. It's something that exists within our minds. And yet they're reconstructing bodies because of gender identity. If gender just exists between the mind, why can't we have the gender we have while also having the body we have? Why do you have to transform the body? They say gender is a social construct, right? Gender is just a social construct. And yet gender identity is somehow biologically determined. So how could you be trapped in the wrong social construct? They never acknowledge any of these contradictions, which is why I think, from the perspective of history, this is a moment that will pass. This doesn't have staying power. What it will require, though, is that people like you and me and our listeners do our part to tell the truth, to point out the contradictions, and to show that there are human costs to getting human nature wrong. And that's what's happening right now. The transgender ideology that gets human nature wrong, there will be human cost to this. And so the book's an attempt to help people see these contradictions and then empower them to respond, speaking the truth in love. It's critically important how you introduce this segment, right? We need to be careful that we don't do anything to stigmatize people who are already struggling with their identity.
Right. I think I really appreciate your comment there about, you know, there's a dreadful price to be paid when we get human nature wrong. And one of the other wonderful aspects of your book, although heart-wrenching, are some of the stories of how, the real people are being subjected to these treatments and just having just awful lifelong ramifications as a result of misdiagnosing or mistreating or getting the wrong treatment or the wrong approach to real problems and issues that they're having. And because there's the resort not to very strong medications and surgeries, these are not, once you go down that path, those are not easily undone. And so I think that's part of what sort of brings this issue to life for me, is reading about real people who have really were already suffering, and whose suffering seems to have only been exacerbated by going down the wrong path.
That's exactly right. The chapter on the book of the book that was hardest to research and write is the chapter on people who transitioned and then detransitioned. And the reason that this was hard to write is just because their stories are so heartbreaking. And several of the stories involve people who transitioned in high school and then detransitioned later in life. These are people who weren't fitting in. They were being picked on. They were being bullied. They were struggling with their sense of self-worth and with their identity. And then the gender therapist that they were seeing said, you know, the solution to your problems is to start taking testosterone. The solution to your problems is to have a mastectomy. And then 5 or 10 years later, they come to regret this. But now they have 5 o'clock shadow. They have scarring on their chest. They have a deepened voice. And they're trying to transition back to their true identity as a woman. And the stories are just heartbreaking. And it's partly what prompted me to write the book. What can we do to prevent future stories like this from having to be told? What can we do to prevent children right now who are struggling with their identity so that they can find the care they need to feel comfortable in their body rather than advice telling them to transform their body?
Well, we are almost out of time for this segment already. It flew by. We've been speaking with Dr. Ryan T. Anderson. He's the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, author of many great books and articles. I love your YouTube channel post as well. I don't know if you have your own channel there or not, but I love the lectures that you give. Super informative and helpful. We've been specifically talking, though, about his latest book. Dr. Anderson's done a great service by putting this book together. And I have to say, it's very courageous, because it's a very difficult issue. And it's called When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. And I got to tell you, folks listening, I really want to encourage you to pick this up. You can get it at Amazon, other bookstores, and it will equip us with just very helpful information. It's super well researched, great footnotes, but it's also written, Dr. Anderson, thank you, it's written in a way that's accessible. It's not overly academic. It's accessible to I think all of us lay people out there, so that we can engage on this issue. It's a super important issue, and if we're not informed, we're likely not to be able to say influence the direction this is all going. If folks want to follow your work, what's the best way to do that, Dr. Anderson?
The best way is actually probably Twitter, because I always put out links to the lectures that I've given that are on YouTube, to articles that I've written, to TV interviews, things like that. It's at Ryan T. And. So at RyanTand. And then you can follow my work at the Heritage Foundation, Public Discourse, and you can find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold.
Well, fantastic. Thank you again so much, Dr. Anderson. Appreciate the book. Everyone listening, get a copy. And thank you for listening to The Catholic Cave. We'll be right back.
If it wasn't for you all, I don't know what I would do.
Catholic Radio Indy.
What an absolute blessing you are.
Start your weekend off right with Catholic Radio Indy's Saturday morning lineup. Join James Littleton for Forming Faithful Families at 9, followed by the pro-life message of I Choose Life at 9:30. Then enjoy today's music with a Catholic message at 10 on Catholic Jukebox Indiana. At 11 o'clock, we'll share an hour of Catholic thought and philosophy on the Catholic Cave. And at noon, it's time to grab a bite, sit back, and enjoy some food for thought with 2 episodes of Faith in Action. That's the Saturday morning lineup from your source for 100% Catholic programming, Catholic Radio Indy.
It makes me feel good. It makes me a joyful
person. Through you guys and the work that God does through you, it's brought joy to the people that I'm around because I'm a different person because of you guys.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and we just got finished talking with Ryan T. Anderson of the Heritage Foundation about his book, When Harry Became Sally. Not to be mistaken with the movie, When Harry Met Sally.
Which is a good movie.
It's a very good movie. Very good movie. And, you know, I think, you know, he obviously very intentionally titled it that to kind of call people's mind back to simpler times, I guess, when that movie aired. But I think it leads into the discussion of what's changed. I mean, this transgender moment, as he puts it in his book, seems to have come on very, very quickly. I mean, you know, we're talking probably last 5, 6, 7 years at the most that we've been dealing with
and it's gaining
this push.
Yeah. And it's gained a lot of steam. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, so-called same-sex marriage, where that, you know, started bubbling up a little bit, and then, then it just it gained more and more momentum. And so the reason why this is important, too, an important topic, I think, is that it touches on a lot of aspects of our culture, our society. It impacts families, it impacts our schools, and that's why we're talking about it. And again, it's a very complex issue. It's a very sensitive issue, and so we want to approach it again with all, you know, due respect and all charity to all involved. But I do think we do have a perspective on it, and here's where I want to maybe building off our conversation with Dr. Anderson, which was super helpful in his book, is this. He mentioned briefly in our conversation with him, but also it's also in the book. There's almost a whole cottage industry now that has sprung up to support this transgender moment, where parents who have again trying to have children who are experiencing some sort of distress, struggling with their gender, are seeking, you know, medical help, medical professional help, and are finding that they're encountering these gender centers for gender identity, and the children are being ushered in to a specific program that's you pointed this out, Mark. There doesn't seem is simply one directional. It's here's what's going to happen. As long as your child self-identifies as a different gender, then here's what's going to happen. And Dr. Anderson points this out in his book too. There's a lack of offering alternatives or other options. It seems like there's one response, and that is medications, strong medications, up to the point of majority, which is typically 18 years old, at which point it becomes surgery. And it seems like, well, wait a minute, where else? What other sort of medical, I can't think of any, right? Medical conditions where the response is so uniform and one direction.
Yeah, this is a unique situation, and it's because it's so politicized. I mean, I don't think there's I can't think of another medical condition where you have a massive, well-funded group of activists kind of pushing their agenda in the background to, you know, basically say this is the way it is to be addressed, and anybody that disagrees with us is going to have to answer for their disagreement. You know, I think it also plays into where we've gotten with medicine, and not just medicine, accounting, other professions, where we have a culture of expertise, where if you're a layperson, you don't really argue with or question the authority of those that you seek help from. So it's not the dialogue back and forth, the patient advocacy, things that were talked a lot about, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, those seem to have gone out the window, especially when you're talking about, you know, gender dysphoria and particularly when you're talking about teenagers. You know, what the doctor says goes, and you better be on the program or you're going to be left behind.
Well, I think as we were talking, there's, again, examples seem to be coming up with more and more frequency where what's being called into question are... let me take a step, our parental rights, and taking a quick step back from that, zooming out a little bit, would be, I would say, because there's an ideology at work here that really brooks no dissent, there has to, the advocates for that ideology have to make use and access state power in order to drive conformity to their agenda. And this is where it comes in. This is where I mentioned parental rights. So parents, you're seeing increasing instances of where parents of children who have children that are experiencing gender dysphoria, if the parents don't fall in line with the medical recommendations of which may include if you fall into the hands of someone who sees it only one way, a medical only one way, which is they must transition as treatment. If you disagree with that as a parent, you want to seek out alternatives. You could find yourself losing your children to the custody of the state.
Yeah, yeah. There's a case out of Ohio where that's exactly what's happened. You know, the parents were reluctant to go along with their daughter's transition, and basically the courts stripped them of custody and granted custody to the grandparents, which were a little bit more amenable to going along with what the doctors and what the hospital were recommending.
Yeah, I want to get to a fundamental point from the book and return to it a little bit. We talked to it with Dr. Anderson just a little bit, but I want to go back and revisit it because it's a philosophical issue, and that's this. There's one of the areas of philosophy is called ontology, which is the philosophy of being. What does it mean to be? Or and so when we use words like is or are claims to they're claims to a certain existence. A certain being, that things exist in and of themselves. Well, and this raises issues, though, and this goes way back, even back to Aristotle and Plato, is what really constitutes the really real? Is there an objective reality that's outside myself? Or is reality simply a construct of my own mind? And this is something that... this is something that philosophers have kind of wrestled with. I bring that up in relation to the transgender debate or moment, as Dr. Anderson calls it, because it seems to me that which I think the word transition anyway is a kind of euphemism and a bit disingenuous anyway. It kind of clouds the issue. But to stick with that term anyway, because that's the one that's being used, it seems to me that In order to pursue a path of transitioning, one has to suppress objective reality, because gender or one's sex, male or female, isn't something that's just simply subjective. There's criteria by which we can measure, we can see, we can from chromosomes to lots of other stuff. And what seems to me that defies common sense is this. If you have and again, setting aside just momentarily that there can be at if I think about, again, a standard deviation, a distribution of data, in this case, data being human beings, sure, at the third deviation, way out on the wings, you'll find, hard cases where with 1 or 2% of any given group, you can find exceptions, things like that make more difficult. But here I'm talking about generally, for 99% of human beings, if you have a room full of human beings, you're going to be able, boys and girls, let's say, since transgender ideology seems to really target children, if you have a room full of boys and girls, very easy to pick out which ones are the boys and which ones are the girls.
Right. And
generally speaking, yeah, you know. And it's not just a social construct either. It's not just because I'm looking at what color shirts people are wearing, pink or blue, right? There's something far more again, philosophy is the, at its best, the exercise of common sense.
Yeah. And if you had difficulty determining in that room of boys and girls who is a boy and who is a girl, a simple blood test would be able to sort it out pretty
correct.
Quickly because
correct.
It's based ultimately on chromosomes. And,
correct.
And, you know, I think that's part of the, interesting thing to this in my mind, philosophically is, you know, the language used is that you're assigned a gender at birth, or
that sounds like someone coming around with a clipboard and saying like kind of what's the name of your baby, you know, that's it's as cavalier as I mean, and here I'm not talking about the difficulty behind the condition that results in that question, but again, it's an abuse of language. I think going back to abuse of language, abuse of power by Joseph Pieper, but it's an abuse of language to say what that you were assigned. There is no such thing. That's my claim. There's no such thing as being assigned a gender. You're created from the moment of conception. You have a gender.
Right. Because what's implied when you say somebody's assigned a gender is that their existence precedes their gender. And there is
which it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It can't.
There is no preceding existence
right.
from which a gender then gets assigned. You know, when you are created male or you are created female. And so it goes to the very being of your ontology from that very moment of conception when you're created. And so that this idea that it's something that comes later, that it's something that is ontologically I guess further downstream, for lack of a better word, I think that's kind of the fundamental category mistake that's made when looking at these gender issues.
Right, and for the it's hard on the Catholic Cave to get into all the hard cases, right? But I'll refer back to Dr. Anderson's book because he does a marvelous job with this. When Harry Became Sally, to look at the hard cases, because I know people's minds what we begin to think of. Well, yeah, okay, well that's. I can imagine and maybe have even met or encountered someone where their gender isn't really clear, or people who are born with, you know, male and female, you know, body parts. And so what about them? And so, well, that's we can get at an understanding of what's actually happening there at the chromosomal level. And what we find is that they're. When you look at it from that perspective, again, kind of empirically, we see male or female, but with what? A kind of, we have something where there's a dysfunction in how the chromosomes have shaped the reality of the body, right? It doesn't mean that there's a third category, or as Dr. Anderson points out, when you look at this is something we're going to pick this up after the break, take a break, but we come back. We're going to have to touch on this because it's just I couldn't believe it till I saw it. The gender-bred man.
Right.
So when we come back, yeah, that's right. Not gingerbread man, the gender-bred man when we come back.
We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org. With access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
One day, one voice shared one message, and one man who provides one way to God. Maybe that's why we have one objective. Share Jesus, the one who loves, saves, and forgives. Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell, and in the cave is still Mark Tuttle and our trusty sidekick and producer, Kent Blandford. And before the break, I brought up the gender-bred man. Okay, so I found this. I don't think I would have believed it unless I saw with my own eyes. And it's here. It's in Dr. Anderson's book. And unfortunately, it's also in the classrooms. That's the problem. So there's what's been created to help elementary age students understand gender ideology or gender identity, I should say, is they've created first a gender-bred person. So imagine your typical gingerbread man that you would make around the holidays. And then they have this whole diagram, Mark, about where you would, in your own mind, they tell children, in your mind, what do you identify with? And then they have boy, girl, both. They also have none of the above. And then they have kind of other. And so you look at this and you're like, ooh, this seems like it's encouraging confusion, to say the least. And then what's happened is the gingerbread person was then seen to resemble too much like a male. So therefore, they've now moved into, guess what, Mark?
The gender unicorn.
Exactly. You heard that right, the gender unicorn. So the gender unicorn, because the unicorn is even more neutral, shall we say, from a gender standpoint. And so they're using this gender unicorn to bring up gender identity, gender expression, sex assigned at birth. Am I physically attracted to women, men, other genders? And am I emotionally attracted to women, men, other? This is all being employed in the classroom and by transgender advocacy groups to help children, come in contact with, I guess, their inner set of feelings that they might have about this. Which, again, I think going back to some Dr. Anderson said, he pointed out that in his estimation, I think if I understood him correctly, he pointed to Gnosticism, that there's this understanding that the real me is not the physical me.
Right.
The real me is something else. But then he also pointed out, said one of the contradictions, we also seem to at the same time, those in this camp would also seem to be kind of strict materialists at the same time, because of the insistence on transitioning gender through, again, powerful drugs, treatments, and then surgeries as well. So it seems to me to be that seems to add a lot of confusion to a already complicated set of circumstances for anyone, an adult, much less a child who is going through all sorts of changes as they mature.
Right. Because, I think kids are having an increasingly difficult time sorting out what it means to be male or what it means to be female if they don't have any sort of confusion about their own identity. The roles that society has are increasingly breaking down. A lot of times we're doing that deliberately. We're deliberately changing what it means to be male, what it means to be female, because the old traditional way of doing things is, I think, just the default attitude is that, well, that's bad because that's old fashioned.
Yeah, so we're going to reject that.
We're going to reject that just because it's the old way that we used to do things. And so there's already that level of confusion there. And then you compound that with this idea that, well, your own identity is fluid and your own identity is, you need to figure this out and figure out who you really are, because it's not, what your body would indicate. It just adds to that confusion. I think his analogy with Gnosticism is right on, because I think even in areas outside of gender confusion, this Gnostic attitude of, well, I'm more than my physical being. I'm more than the sort of material circumstances of my life. All of these things are confining me, and I need to liberate myself from them and free myself from what everybody else is telling me I am to find my true identity. That's pernicious. And it's out there, and it doesn't, there's a lot of instances where you don't have to scratch the surface very deep to find that, no, really the goal that people are being given is to escape your bodied existence into to some sort of understanding of who I truly am.
Well, and I think that I might even point to and you might disagree with me, but I might even point to this is in some ways traceable back to Rene Descartes. I'm gonna bring up. I thought you might disagree. You couldn't see Mark furrow his brow at me when I brought up Descartes. Because, you know, it's been a while since I barbecued Descartes, and so I'm going to barbecue him right now. And here's why. I'm going to barbecue him because he introduces in a very prominent way into our thought, going back 400 years, this body-self dualism, that that the body is one thing, the self is something else. They just happen. I'm a self that inhabits a body, and that's a profound error. And I think what that has done is it. Once you have that kind of understanding about if you affirm that as a true explanation of the person, I think that is what has laid opened a few doors to things like radical body enhancements, excessive tattooing, strange and unusual piercings, and things of that nature. So I'm not picking on earrings. I think those are perfectly lovely. But I'm talking about weird piercings. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Because the body is just sort of a. It's sort of an adornment of my true self that's inhabiting it, and so I can decorate it. And I don't want to be too flippant with my words, having just picked on some of the abusive language that I think is going on with the transgender ideology. But I think that's a part of it. I think it's part of. I don't think that this transgender is coming out of the blue. I think that the momentum and stuff is new, kind of new on the scene. But I think some of the I'm going to suggest that maybe some of the precursors are some of this body self dualism that might be out there. But I do think also too. I think gay rights play a role into this because gay rights have been very that movement has been very successful in changing attitudes and a different understanding as people around people who are same sex attracted. And very successful in garnering political power. So I think in a lot of ways, the transgender advocacy is borrowing their playbook and in a lot of ways to advance their goals and ambitions.
I think philosophically it comes from a place where the idea that gender, male, female, is ultimately for the purpose of procreation within a family. That's what's been thrown out. That's what's been questioned. And all of this kind of stems from that. You know, once you get rid of the idea that the purpose of male and female is to procreate, bring kids into being, and raise them within the context of a family, then you've kind of lost what the purpose of maleness and femaleness really is.
And you lost the sense of what marriage is.
Exactly.
I'm just saying this is the latest casualty,
right,
I think.
Exactly. So once you have confusion over what the purpose of maleness and femaleness is, you have confusion over even the very existence of such concepts. You know, is there really even a useful, useful categorization of male versus female if we're not talking about it in the context of family anymore? And I think the transgender advocates would say no. There's no useful reason to classify a person as male or female. It's whatever you want to be.
Right, and hence you get all sorts of implications once we affirm that and start going down that path. Yeah. But guess what? We're out of time,
And we've only scratched the surface, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're done with this issue. I mean, I this is going to be with us for some time. It may run out of steam, but again, pick up a copy of When Harry Became Sally by Dr. Ryan T. Anderson. He went to Princeton, got his PhD at Notre Dame. Very solid intellectual, and someone who's going to help us become informed. That's the thing we have to do first. Let's become informed on the issue, and from there we can engage the culture.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. We'll catch you next week. Until then, may God bless. The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent@CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.